It's time now for the Wednesday Morning Coffee Club. Welcome to the Wednesday Morning Coffee Club with Bill and Jenny Sparks, Dave and Chris Rieckert, Tim Ani, and the crew. Bill will be taking your phone calls, and you will hear lots of conversation. We will have cooking tips, demonstrations of products, and much, much more.
And you may reach us by calling 1-646-558-8656. You will need the meeting ID 848-725-450. And when you're asked for a user ID, just press pound. You may download Zoom from the Play Store or the App Store.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Bill Sparks.
Well, a very good Wednesday morning to you. I hope you're doing well on this Wednesday. It's very cool here in Florida, unusually unseasonably cool, but they tell me that's only going to last a day or two. It's only going to get to 65 or 70 today, so I guess we got to suffer through it for another day or two. But here we are, and here we are ready to go again. A lot of great topics for you this morning. Let's start with Jeff. How are you this morning, Jeff?
Well, I really can't complain, Bill. We're having some light snow, or what do they call it? Snow and slush and rain. Snush, they called it on Channel 13 or something like that. I'm not sure, in Albany. But it's doing okay, and we have 35 degrees here. We're warming up, and I can't wait for summer. But that's going to be a few months away.
Listen to Mike in Evansville.
Well, good morning, everyone. It's 16 degrees right now, so looking forward to 67 on Saturday. So very cool here. We've got a lot of good stuff to talk about after we do our introductions today.
Yes, we do. We do, we do, we do. Dave and Chris?
Well, we're doing okay. It's a little chilly here.
Blowing snow and 26 degrees.
But otherwise?
Otherwise, it's good.
We're doing good.
And we want to acknowledge Ellen and Joe. We'll get you in just a moment. Let's see.
And this is a 210 area code as well, Bill.
We got a 210 area code?
Yes.
Well, we'll recognize them too. And we've got Jenny. Jenny, where are you at?
I'm in the living room this morning.
You're in the living room?
It's a little too cool to be out on the one eye.
Oh, okay.
With all the windows open.
So you've got some stories to tell too today, don't you?
Yeah, we have some stories to tell, all right.
Well, let's see. Tim?
Well, I'm in the living room this morning, too. It's a little too cool here to be out anywhere. It's 12 degrees. So
it's always cold when you are, Tim.
Oh, yeah.
And I was going to complain about 65 with sun and say it's cool. Yesterday it was cool.
Well, I don't know what cool is. I mean, where Chris and Joe and Dave are, it's about 25 degrees or something like that. And here it's about 35 degrees. So I guess it's all relative to where you are in the country that where it's cool. And Mike said it was 15 degrees and Tim said it was 12 degrees. So that's cold. To me, that's cold. I don't care. There's not much difference between 15 and 12 except 3 degrees.
No.
But that's cold at that point.
Once it gets below freezing, it's just cold.
Certainly. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, we've got lots of topics. Mike, we want to start with you, and then we'll get to...
Okay, well, one of the things, by the way, at least on Zoom here, Bill, you're kind of low, so I'm just mentioning that. But I guess the main thing I want to talk about, before I get to mine, though, I got an experience the other day with going through the vocational rehabilitation process. There's a course that I want to take to become a Salesforce administrator, which is a good paying position. But I had to learn about this process called order of selection. And now you have to prove that you have disabilities. And you're like, in other words, the more disabled you are, the better your chances of getting services. So it's not like the more employable you are, it seems to be the more disabilities you can rack up, the more different services that you use. So you have to go in there and, you know, and prove that, yeah, I use access technology to cook or to label medicines or to, you have to kind of be a self-advocate and think of all of the different ways that you use access technology to increase your odds of getting services. And it's very strange, but I want to talk about Jeff's experience, because we talked last week about Instacart, and I was trying to find people who had actually used it since they changed their pricing model to actually explain what your real costs are in addition to the food and other things that you might use that. So Jeff, talk about that. Now, you have a flat annual fee, and then you pay, what, 3% for the shoppers?
Here's how it started, by the fact that they gave me a promotion by saying you could have a free 2 weeks of Instacart with no fees, no service fees, and no delivery fee. And the minimum order was $35. So that week was coming to an end, and they didn't say it was a promotional price when I got the promotion. It said to me, your promotion period is ending, and the cost for you now for the year is $99. So that's $99 a year. And what does it give you? It gives you Instacart shopping. It gives you 1 hour delivery times where available. Most of the times it's available, but there are certain stores where it may not be available. But for example, the supermarket here is Price Chopper. And if I put my delivery in, it will give me a 1 hour delivery time depending on when I put it in. So if I put it in, let's say at 10 o'clock today, it will tell me 1 hour delivery time. And that's pretty good. I mean, it does take the time for the shopper to do the shopping. But if I put my order in at 10 o'clock, I can guarantee that I'll have my order delivered to me by 11:30, which is really not bad because they have to factor in the shopping time. And it also said no service charge, and the minimum order is $35, and it put in an automatic tip of 3%, which you can change. That's for the person that does the shopping and drives and delivers your food to your house. Now, I'm not sure, in some cities where there are large cities, someone may do the shopping and someone may do the driving. That might be different. It also guarantees that you can order from more than one store at the same time. You'll get two different delivery people. So, for example, if I wanted to buy stuff at Price Chopper, and then I wanted to buy stuff at Sam's Club or BJ's Wholesale or Aldi's, I could do that, and I can coordinate those deliveries so they'll deliver both things to me without a problem. And there's no surge pricing on deliveries. There's nothing like that. It's a flat fee. $35 is the minimum for grocery shopping. No fee for delivery. No fee for service charge. And if you take that $99 a month, then you divide it by 12, it comes out to about $8 and something, $8 a month, basically. So
$99 a year, or
$99 a year. I'm sorry.
Or I guess you don't have to do that, and you pay a $5.99 plus $3.99. So about $10. So I guess if you were going to use it less than 10 times a year, 9 or less, you could just pay about $10 a month as you go, or $10 per order as you go.
Right. Yes. I mean, it all depends on how long, how much you want to use the service. I know even if I use that as well as ShopRite, which does deliver, I'm going to use Instacart more than the amount of time. So I'm definitely going to get my money's worth out of it.
And they do not charge you anything extra.
They do not charge you anything extra. Now, some stores have a different policy on deliveries. For example, Sam's Club. Sam's Club, it said there was a two. I had to schedule my delivery, and there was a 2 hour delivery time. But that may be because it was very busy, and there also that day there was also some inclement weather. So I'm not really sure.
One of the cool things I like is, and it's not really a big deal, but I think it's kind of neat. You can go in there, and you can, if you watch, you can see that when your person starts shopping, and you can see, okay, they have 2 of 9 items in the cart. Now they have 5 of 9 items. And you can also see when they're driving to you.
That's right. And that is a definite plus. I really enjoy that. It's very accessible. The person that, for example, the person said, what was it? I bought something, and they wanted to replace it with something else. And they wanted to know if I would approve it. And there's an approve button, which I did, and there was no problem. And it worked out perfectly. And they can send you messages, and they're quite readable. And you have a log of what they're doing on the screen as well when you go to the message area. So, for example, when they replaced something, that was also put in the message area. So it worked out. It works out pretty well.
Now, one thing I saw it, and definitely on the Sam's, I looked in there, and it said that the prices online, the Instacart, may differ from those in store. But there was also a place to put in your Sam's Club numbers. So I don't know if that makes those prices change. Now I know when in the beginning they charged more for things. I remember, like, for example, if you got a chicken. Cooked chick rotisserie from the deli was $6.99, but it was $5.99 in store. And now they've changed, or since they have changed, where the prices were not different. And I wonder if that is still the case, or if now some of the things are more through Instacart than they are in store. And you won't know that unless you actually did some A-B comparisons and went into the store and looked at what certain things were. So
I just did an order from Sam's through Instacart about a week ago, And the prices I saw for the things I normally buy, I don't know if they were exact, but they were real, real close, if not exact. I did put in my Sam's membership number, though.
Yeah, and I did my Price Chopper order, and I showed a friend of mine the order, and the person that I talked to said they're pretty close. They're about exactly the same. So, you know, again, what I like about Instacart, and Chris, you'll like that as you go from store to store, you'll like that it keeps a track of all the items that you buy, so that if you want to shop again for stuff, you can go. You don't have to search for them again. They're always keeping a list of all of your items, which is what I really find is really nice about this particular service.
Great stuff. We have a caller with a raised hand in the 407 area code.
Good morning.
Good morning, Shirley. How are you?
Okay. How are you?
Pretty good.
I have a quick thing for you. I have my weekly question for you, and then I want to need to ask Jeff how I can get with him offline here. I want to talk to him for a few minutes about the Spectrum device, but I don't want to take time during the phone call to do it. So, Bill, I guess I'll get you with my weekly question first, and you probably know what it is.
Okay.
Did you get the 14-day?
Yes. 14.
And how are they working with your iPhone compared to the 10-day?
No, the same? They're working the same, actually.
Okay, so they, like I said, I just wanted to make sure with you because I've got to get a new phone, and I don't want to do that unless I'm fairly certain it's going to work. So, but you're not having any problem with the 14-day ones. You're still getting all the readouts and everything.
No question. Dave Reichert's got one now, too. And
okay.
He's not having a problem.
And do you have the 14-day, Dave?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So you're both having success with that.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. That's super. And you're using it with the iPhone app also?
Uh-huh. An iPhone 8.
I want you guys to, out there in the listening audience, raise your hand, do whatever. Have you ever anticipated buying something and then getting it home and find out it doesn't work or it's not going to work for you? Well, we had a problem. We have a microwave above the stove in the kitchen here in our Florida house. The numbers and things weren't working. We had marked it in Braille last year, but it still wasn't working. You push numbers, they wouldn't work. So I had heard about an accessible Whirlpool microwave / convection oven that was to be powered with the phone app and Lady A or your Google Home. Well, we had to order this thing because it wasn't in the stores, and it's quite expensive, to be honest with you. It's about $400, and that was on sale. First thing, we got it home, got it put up, but then it was very, very, very difficult to connect to the internet. Then you had to use the mobile app to do it. Well, the app wasn't really, really, really accessible. Right, Jennifer?
It's definitely not. That was the first thing wrong with it. And then it wouldn't connect to the Wi-Fi the way we had it set up, so we had to split off the bands of the Wi-Fi so it could go the slow route.
So after we finally got it online, got it going, then we went to Lady A. Well, what these companies don't tell you is something may be Lady A capable, but that's all it is. The only thing to this app was you could tell the oven to set the time of the minutes, like you could set it for 4 minutes. But
not always, though. It had to be in a remote mode, and in order to put it in the remote mode, you had to hit the remote button on the microwave. And now it's a flat glass panel. There are no physical buttons that you can feel on there. And even for a sighted person, we found out it does not have a button that says start. You have to hold the plus 30-second button for a few seconds to start the thing if you want to start it. So if you hit the remote button, then it would set the time, but you had to physically go and hit a start button before it would cook.
So if you set something on your Lady A, you would have to physically get up and go walk into the kitchen and start that button. You could not do it from the device. So that's where Lady A stopped. I haven't gotten Google to work on it yet, though I don't think that's going to be an option. So the skill that was done was a generic Whirlpool skill.
Whirlpool appliance.
Right. So it was for microwaves. It was for washers, dryers, refrigerators, ovens, whatever they happen to be using. So I guess the lesson I'm trying to impart on everybody is, A, do your research very well. And just because it says it's Amazon capable doesn't mean that it's going to work properly for you. There's nothing in this oven that...
Which leaves us with another problem now, is that now we're going to have to get somebody to take this thing down from the range and package it all back up and find something else to go up there.
When you guys bought this oven, was it at an appliance store and they didn't have it out that you could see how it worked to play with it at all, correct?
No, they did not. They said when we went to the store to buy it, they had them in stock. Wrong. They did not have them in stock. So I think there's just red flags up here. When you read about something being...
We looked on three stores and they said they had it in stock, and they went to three different stores and none of them had it. Well, one of them had two display models.
So we just need to be aware as consumers as to exactly what you're buying. So it's very helpful, I think, to check out reviews, if you can see YouTube reviews, you know, whether to be a tracked record on something like this.
Now, I know that if you search for talking microwave oven on Amazon.com, it will bring up, they have their own brand, which is, I think, a 700-watt one. And then they have another one that's made by General Electric. But then again, you don't know, unless you get to play with it, what you're really getting at that point. But they did mention General Electric as one of them.
You know, I did some research on that now. The Amazon is the only one that is actually built to withstand all the commands or have the commands. The General Electric, we're falling under that same thing with the Whirlpool again. So, and if anybody wants to correct me, it is a real problem. So, you know,
This microwave had some cool features. I thought it was interesting that it has a sensor in it that listens, so that if you pop popcorn in the microwave, it listens to how close the pops are apart, so you don't, to keep you from burning your popcorn. I thought that was kind of cool.
So I mean, there are some good things about it. There's no question that it's a very capable, very good microwave. But when you've got a very limited Lady A app and a phone app that's far below level as far as, you know, accessibility, you'd push on a button, it just wouldn't work.
And anyone who wants to comment or contribute who's on the phone, hit *9 to raise your hand, and we'll definitely recognize you. And the other thing is, Bill, I had the same experience years ago when I first bought my first internet radio, and I thought it would be accessible, and it was made by Polk Audio. And unfortunately, it was not. I could use the presets to go from station to station, but I had to have a sighted person enter those stations in on the radio for me to get it to work. I got rid of that radio fairly quickly. As a matter of fact, I sold it on eBay and got rid of it. So I was quite happy to get rid of that particular radio because it just, it sounded great. Great audio, no problems using it, but it just did not work the way it was supposed to work. So, and I think we've seen them all. Chris, what do you do for a microwave oven, David? Chris, what do you guys use?
We have two. One is a Sharp, and a KitchenAid rather, and the other is a Whirlpool, which are made by the same people. One is a convection, and the other one isn't. Now they're not. Chris made some Braille overlays for them, and they seem to work okay, but they're not. I mean, as far as if you weren't able to make an overlay for it, it would be a problem.
I believe that when I got my first GE microwave oven, when I owned my house, I remember calling, I think it was the GE Answer Center. I called them up and they sent me a Braille overlay for the oven. And for some reason, I got it put on, everything worked okay, but the overlay tape was not good. It didn't stay properly after you put it on. I have a GE microwave oven in my apartment, and I had my friend help me mark it up, use clear Dymo tape, put it on the oven, and it works fine. I have no problem with it. I can't say anything. It's a simple oven. I didn't braille up every function because I know there are functions I'm not going to use, but I can cook with it. I can make popcorn with it. I can do that kind of stuff with it. So I'm not really I'm not really complaining. The key here, Bill, is that sometimes the old-fashioned remedies sometimes seem to be better than the newfangled remedies. But Chris and Dave, when you bought the convection oven, were there challenges to getting it to work, even though you brailed it up and stuff? Were there challenges that you still have to encounter with those particular appliances? Okay. Well, that's the thing.
The other thing is, if anybody else has had an appliance or an issue, feel free to either give us a call, or you can always send me an email if you prefer not to talk on the phone at bill@billsparks.org, and I'll read it out over the air, because I've got a feeling I'm not the only one that this has ever happened to.
Yeah, I vote for old school. I just bought my girlfriend Cheryl a Pit Boss smoker, and what I like is, once I got through the fun of putting it together, I wish I'd listened a little more closely to Dave's demo. He might have learned some things that in the assembly process that might have sped me up a little bit. But I like it's got like a 11 position knob that clicks for the different temperatures. And I'm like, well, that's cool. And I can use this thing and get it pretty close to the temperature that I want. And I say that because it fluctuates a little bit. I guess that's the way these things work. So got smoker 101.
And when the knob clicks, Mike, does it stop at each end so that if you're turning the knob in circles, does it go around from?
No, it doesn't go around, Jeff. It wouldn't be designed that way. So it's one end to the other, like a radio dial. So
they go up so far, Jeff, and then they stop.
That's what I meant. Okay, very good.
Prevalent clicks.
We looked at one of those. There was a Pit Boss and a Traeger, and I don't know what the difference is between the two things. Greg seems to love the Pit Boss over the Traeger, but a lot of people like the Traeger.
So, isn't the Traeger but the one that's sold by QVC occasionally, Dave? I thought I've heard them mention that name on QVC. I could be wrong, but I'm not sure. But
yeah, they handle Traeger.
I know they had a Masterbuilt as well, who also makes smokers. So
I think the Pit Boss, you can move the grate over to one side or something and get to the open flame if you want to see or something is what he says he likes about it.
Well,
you can do that on the Traeger or not.
Yeah, you can.
And they're both comparably about the same price. Mike, did you get yours put together?
Oh, yeah, we put it together. Cheryl and I did it as a project, and so it had about four legs, and two of them had wheels you put on there, and then you had to connect the device that basically has, I call it the brain of the thing, and inserted in there. So it's a total of, I think, 24 screws or whatever by the time you put the handle on and everything else. So, well, we didn't take the time to read the manual, and when you first start, you can't just dump your pellets in there right away. You've got to basically heat the thing up and burn off any initial residue that might be in the device. And so it was a learning experience. And so I actually removed what they call the hopper, and only to realize, well, geez, there's a little knob here on the back. I could just remove that and remove the pellets. And so it was a learning experience, but we got it done and cooked our first pork chops and sausage. We didn't quite have enough time to do the pork butt on Sunday by the time we got it figured out. But it was a pretty neat, pretty good taste, and it's a neat learning experience. I knew nothing about smokers, so go back and listen to those reviews from Dave or save you some time, I think, in getting up to speed and how they work.
And what type of wood chips did you use?
Well, I started with hickory. They're not wood chips in the sense of the old smokers. They're called pellets, yeah.
Right.
See, when I first heard about them 10 years ago, I thought I was referring them to sticks, because that's what I thought they used to use, and they would burn for a couple hours and they would just break off and then that would stop the smoke. But now you just put these pellets in there. You go buy a 20-pound bag. And
they are really amazing. They're easy to use, and they're really not too complicated to put together once you do it the first time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it wasn't hard to put it together. It was just more, like I said, I didn't read all the instructions and just dumped the pellets in there. And I kept getting these code ERR. And so I thought, well, the sensors weren't connected, but sometimes you get that code and you have to just unplug it and plug it back in. I don't know if that's a safety feature or I don't think
it is.
Yeah.
If you buy the 3-pound bag, I mean the 20-pound bags from Home Depot, if you're willing to buy three, you can get free shipping, which Traeger actually won't give you, but or at least they didn't used to.
So did it taste smoky, Mike? The food?
It didn't taste consistently smoky. My brother said sometimes those things actually do a smoke ring, so certain parts of the racks might have a smokier flavor than other parts. So I think there's an art in how you place the meat. Is that what you found, Dave?
Actually, the way we do it is we will put it on the first click from low, which is
like 200 or 225 or something, right?
It's 180, I think.
Yeah, I think it's 180. And then let that thing smoke for a while, and then you can turn it up to whatever temperature. Because the more smoke you put in there, the more of the smoke taste you're going to get.
Oh, and the lower the temperature, the more smoke you get.
Right. We cooked it kind of fast to get them done because it was already noon, yeah, and I had to leave. So now
grill, you don't get a lot of smoke if you take it up to high where they recommend grilling. You don't get much smoke, but if you back it off quite a bit, and then after it's been on for a little while, then if you turn it up, then you get a little bit of speed and some smoke.
Now, I was going to ask you, the first setting is just called smoke, and I didn't know, so that actually does have temperature to it, because I know some of the original ones, you could put it on smoke, and it had...
Actually, the very first setting, when you can't turn it any further, is shutdown.
Okay, and our pit boss, the first one says smoke, and then if you go all the way to the right, it says high heat. But what I was wondering is, some of them I heard you could smoke cheese or nuts, so I thought it actually didn't make heat that would melt us. So I need to go read the manual on that. But yes, yeah, what I read is the lower you cook, it will take longer, but you will get a more smoky flavor.
That's right.
Food. We have the settings, the degrees for the knob. Like the second click is so many degrees, the third click is, you know.
Yeah, kind of went in, well, it wasn't all 25-degree increments.
No, it was 180 and then 225, 250, 275, 325, 350, 375, and I think the grill is actually 425.
425.
Now, see, mine's different. I have the Pit Boss 340, and I think it jumps 325. It goes up to 500, and the last one says high heat, which I think is still 500, but maybe it's...
Yeah, it probably is.
I think... They do vary. Did you also get the iGrill, Michael?
No, I'm going to do that, though, so that I can... It's got two readings. The hopper has one temperature reading, and then on the front of the grill has a different reading of the actual cooking temperature, I suppose. But, yeah, I'm going to get that iGrill so that I can kind of see what's going on with the food. But I noticed it was going up and down. I don't know if... Because we did the... They told you to run it at high heat for, like, 30 to 40 minutes, which is up near 500 degrees, and then... I don't know if then turning it down, it said something about the flame going out. So I don't know if it's really designed to just to go to one temperature and not really fluctuate it as you cook. I don't know if Dave and Chris, if you experienced that, or I guess you have to turn it off and it runs for so many minutes and you don't want to unplug it or let it cool down.
Ours, you don't have to. Well, because the thermostat, if it needs pellets, if it doesn't need pellets, it just shuts the flame. It stops the pellets from going in. So then the flame goes out, and well, it goes down. It's not completely out, but it goes down. And then when it needs to get the temperature back up to where it's supposed to be, then it'll start feeding the pellets again.
But there's not a lot of fluctuation in this one, really. I mean, it'll drop pellets, just a few pellets every, what, 2 or 3 minutes, depending on where you have it set.
Something like that.
Yeah. Okay, so when the pellets run out, does the device stop? Because that's what happened to us, and I didn't know if it was designed that way.
It probably will, because it's not...
I don't know. We haven't ever let it run out of pellets.
Well, it was full of pellets, so I didn't know why it ran out before we were ready, but so it gobbled them up kind of quick. I don't know if that was that high heat thing that we did first, or...
Well, the high heat's probably is going to burn the pellets a lot faster.
Okay. It burns, what did I tell you, 18 pounds an hour if you run it hours on high, I think is what, isn't that what it said?
Oh, yikes. Okay, wow.
No, that's not what it said. Let me go
that
look
up. Sounds a little high, but yeah, so we were like a pork butt or something that's going to take longer, or you could smoke a turkey on it, so you're going to...
Well, you wouldn't have it on high for that.
No, of course not, but I mean, so it makes a big difference. That's what gobbled up those pellets. We were like, wow, then we had the hopper full and gobbled them up, so...
Can you hear this thing dropping the pellets as it's cooking, Chris?
You can.
Yeah, you can hear them, little tick sounds as the pellets fall in there. Yeah,
yeah, you can hear them drop into the metal inside the ash pot.
They call it an auger. So we were picturing something to spin really fast, but it's kind of rotates very slowly.
The Pit Bosses, can they be bought at places like Walmart and places?
Yeah,
like-
I got this one, a Black Friday special. It was regularly $3.99. Got it for $2.49, and that was at Academy Sports. So that was a Black Friday deal. So we grabbed it. Fortunately, she had her van. We were over with our families in Belleville and grabbed it. But
And you probably could buy it at Home Depot or Lowe's Home Improvement Centers, too. I would think they may have some of that stuff. I'm not sure if they do, but I know they sell Weber grills and stuff there, so they might have the same thing there as well. I don't know.
I was at Ace Hardware the other day, and they had the Big Egg, and they had all kinds of grills, and they had all kinds of... they had the Traeger there at the Ace Hardware. So you just never know what you're going to run into. But I think the other part of the discussion we wanted to discuss this hour was, as you know, Jenny and I have come down to Florida, whatever. What is your guys' suggestions on, I can order my groceries, I can do a lot of things, but sometimes you just need to communicate with people, whatever. How do you start over? Anybody have any ideas on that on the panel? If like Michael got a job and he moved to, I don't know where.
Well, I think that would be a lot easier than in the past, because you could use, especially if you had an iPhone, you could use GPS technology to see what's around you. Of course, you could use your Amazon Echo or Google Home to ask about businesses and their addresses and directions and their locations and proximity to you. And I don't know if they still have the welcome wagons or something like that, where you could talk to people locally about what's around you. I guess if you're blind, if you have any blindness organization, local groups or something.
Yeah, the other thing is you're in the Lions Club, for example, Bill. You can find out if there's a Lions Club chapter where you are, and that's certainly a good way to meet people. When I came to Albany, I knew no one. I didn't know a soul in Albany. I came to Albany on April 23rd of 1980. I started my job on April 24th of 1980 and had to learn how to meet people. And if it wasn't for my ham radio hobby at the time, I wouldn't have known anyone. But I was at the right place at the right time, and one of the guys I worked with was a ham radio operator, and he introduced me to people who introduced me to other people. And maybe that's what happened with me. I can't tell you. And we have a 1407. Let's see if I can find it.
Yes, it's me, Shirley, again. I wanted to comment on Bill's question. One thing that I did before we came down here the first time, when I knew we would be here for a while, and it really helped me a lot. Since I'm a ham radio operator, I'm not saying you are, but this just kind of gives you an idea. I looked up some of the ham clubs on the internet. The internet helped me a lot. And so I made some contacts with that organization, or some of the organizations, before I ever came down, and found one couple in particular who was, you know, very open to meeting us and things like that, talked about some clubs with us and stuff. But I did the same thing. I since I'm an ACB member, which I know you are, I looked up the local ACB chapter and called and talked to the president of ACB. And I did sort of a similar thing, but not exactly with our religious affiliation. I'm the same religion as Jeff is. And, you know, I looked up congregations, Jewish congregations and things like that, that were down here. And I didn't really call anybody from them, but because we were fortunate enough that one of the hams we met when we first came down, you know, invited us to a service. So that helped a lot. But, you know, I found just looking for, you know, similar types of interest and trying to hook up with organizations and things like that kind of gave us a beginning, a place to start from. It, you know, it didn't solve everything, and, you know, we had to work a little harder than that, but that at least kind of gave us an initial thing. And like, you know, Lynn's in a group for federal retirees, and so we looked up to see where they had chapters, and we started going to those meetings, and there's an AARP group down here. So, you know, I just did a lot of it through organizational type things, and I found it was a good way to meet people and at least get the ball rolling.
Now that you've been in Florida, how long have you been down in Florida now, Shirley?
Well, we just come down for part of the, you know, for the winter, and we've probably, I don't know, done this for 7-8 years off and on. I had to skip, you know, 2 years at different times that were not right in a row. They were in between, you know, because it was we skipped 1 year and then had to skip another one a little bit later. And at first we weren't doing it on a regular basis, but altogether it's probably been about 7 or 8 times now.
So if you had to move, if at some point in your life you said, I really don't like cold weather, I don't want to be in cold weather, would you think about moving to Florida full time at some point?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. There's no doubt about it. If I was going to go anywhere, this would be the place. And that's what I was looking for before we even decided what city to come to. You know, I was looking for a place that had three things. I wanted something that had a fair Jewish affiliation. I wanted something with a good, you know, ACB chapter, which this one here is big. And I wanted something, you know, that had quite a bit of ham radio activity. Because I wanted to know when I first started that if I ever wanted to do something permanently, I wanted to establish myself someplace that I felt that I could live long term.
What about transportation? I know your husband can see, but what about transportation? Did you consider that as an option when you were moving to Florida as well?
Yes, I did too. I definitely did. I moved to a place where I can get, you know, door-to-door service, with a bus, with a local bus company. So that was something I definitely did consider, you know, in picking where we are. We're not, you know, in a big city per se. We're in a suburb of a big city. But I can get service from here to, you know, into three different counties, basically. So I definitely did consider that because unfortunately none of us ever knows what's going to happen. Not that I would necessarily stay in this house if I was by myself, but I knew at least if I needed it. In fact, I have signed up for the transportation here, although I don't use it. That definitely played a part in it.
Go ahead, Mike.
No, so maybe I'm antisocial, but the first three things I'm going to look at is A, right, is there paratransit, or especially nowadays, I want to know if I have Uber and Lyft access in the community, and I also want to know if I have some kind of shopping service, be it Instacart or, of course, Walmart and Kroger's now doing some deliveries in markets. A lot of that stuff's rolling out.
Right.
Can I ask what part of Florida you're in, Shirley? You don't have to. I know your address.
We're in a suburb of Orlando. It's actually called Winter Springs. It's a suburb of Orlando.
Okay.
We didn't want to be directly in Orlando, like right on top of Disney World or anything like that. We didn't want to be right in the city, but it's close enough to the city that, you know, we can get to, you know, the ACB meetings, and we can take advantage of different things that Orlando has without being right in Orlando. And
now,
as I said, I can use the transit service.
Are you near Winter Park?
About 20 minutes.
Okay, because I have a friend of mine who's visually impaired who lives in Winter Park. That's why I was just curious.
Oh, okay. Well, when we talk offline, you'll have to tell me who it is. Maybe it's somebody I've met.
Okay.
So, and I, by the way, I don't want to take up too much more time, but I realized also I have a phone number that I could give you on the air that you can reach me at, or I can still write to you, as you said earlier.
Yeah, please write to me because I have nothing to write it down with right now.
I will do that.
Work the
console. I will definitely do that. You'll hear from one of us later today.
Okay, very good. And then we'll
I appreciate it. But anyway, Bill, does that help you at all? I mean, you haven't responded to anything I said.
No,
does that give you?
I'm just, how are you going to respond with Jeff? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, that's
does
okay,
that
Bill.
Give you any ideas that you think could be helpful at all for you?
Oh, sure. I'm going to make some contacts and especially get the transportation.
My sons
are kind of busy working here on the Legend, the church thing. But
okay. And I don't know if you want to answer this on air, and if you don't, I understand. But I know you usually just come down for about a month or so. Is that your timetable this year, or has that changed?
It's probably going to be longer than that.
I don't expect you to define that more on the air. I understand.
No, it's going to be
okay.
Longer.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right.
You know, I think it's an important issue. Go ahead, Jennifer.
We have a clubhouse, and there's all kinds of things that go on, but there's no sidewalk that you can walk to it, and it's so close that if you took an Uber, they would laugh at you and tell you you were retarded. They probably wouldn't even come and pick you up because it's not even a fourth of a mile probably from us.
I wonder
if Ira could help you get there.
I was going to say the same thing, if you could get them to help you with it. If that was, you know, if you guys are members of that, aren't you?
Yeah, you probably could.
Yeah, I never thought of that, using Ira like a mobility instructor just to get a quick orientation of your neighborhood and where things are and...
Yeah,
but I wonder.
Absolutely nothing we can walk to from here. There's a lot of stuff within 10 minutes of driving, but
I just wonder if your community would be helpful or if they're kind of cliquish, because that's what I have here. I live have a senior community.
In order to meet them, you'd have to go where they hang out.
Right, but what I'm saying is, even if you do that, at least here, they're kind of cliquish. I mean, there's a certain people that play the cards together and the bingo people together, and I...
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, you're going to run into that, but...
Well, right, but they're kind of uncomfortable around blind folks, so you have to be kind of aggressive and aggressive, but take a little bit of initiative and just say hello to people and walk at the tables and strike up conversations. It's not like, and maybe it's different there, I don't know, but that's been kind of my experience. It's hard to just kind of fall in, you know, with the group of people, but maybe your experience will be different, or maybe you're just more social than I am. I don't know. It's
not easy, no matter where you go. I don't think now. I've seen some people have an easier time than what I do, but I think it's pretty tough a lot of times as a blind person going into a group of sighted people and always just, you know, get accepted and welcomed and, you know, necessarily be a part of everything like everybody else's that goes in. Now, I've certainly met some people down here that have been an exception to the rule, that have been very welcoming to me, and we've made a couple friends, you know, that I feel we've made good socializations with, but most of the people aren't really that interested.
So where
we've made a few friends. I just want to be careful that we actually make friends and we don't end up with people that we hire to do things, and that's how we get to know them. Because then you wonder if they're your friend, or they're your friend as long as you pay them, and you don't want to get in that.
Do you have an ACB affiliate anywhere that you could get to and meet some other blind people?
I don't know. I haven't.
Or have you checked?
I haven't checked.
I mean, I found that to be just a really good starting resource for me, and we've joined the local organization here, and
I think there's a lighthouse we talked about going downtown maybe.
Yeah, they have one of those here also, you know, in Orlando, of course. So I would, you know, I would really look at things like that, think of different things, and Bill, you're a federal retiree, so they might have like a NARF chapter somewhere near where you are, National Association of Retired Federal Employees, and they have meetings, and they might have an AARP group down there if you're at all interested in that. You know, I mean, I just did a lot of research before we ever came down, and because we, you know, we do like to socialize with people, and so that was something, you know, I really felt we needed, and like I said, that was very helpful for me.
Well, this
okay, and I know that
it goes right back to my first comment I made this morning. Perhaps if I'd done some very diligent research on this particular oven, this convection oven, it gets right back to the same thing.
Right,
doing your homework,
Joe Ellen. Do you guys have a question? You raised your hand again.
Wait, really?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm just making a comment real quick. What we did, because we belong to our poetry society, and there was not a blind person in the group, but we were welcomed and, you know, all of that. And same thing with our church choir, the same thing. And they warmed up to us really, really well. I mean, yeah. So you might want to, you know, look into that, you know, first where, you know, churches and stuff like that. So that's also a possibility.
Good suggestion.
Yeah, it's just a gamble, the social thing. And there may be one or two people that are just outgoing people and will, you know, make you feel welcome and do things and interact and spend time together and not want to charge you to do you favors. You just don't want to exploit that either and make sure to pay someone for gas and not just assume that they're happy to take you from place to place. They may not mind the time factor, but they certainly want the respect of.
It just takes a little bit of time. I know the first time that I moved from the Altoona area up to Wellsboro, Pennsylvania, that's up near the Grand Canyon of Pennsylvania, I had a mobile home. And I kind of met people the hard way because the people that were moving my mobile home from Altoona up to Wellsboro crashed it.
Oh no.
When they got it up to the mobile home park where we parked it, I didn't know anybody. And fortunately, when they brought it into the park and the truck that was moving it wasn't strong enough to put it on the space that it was supposed to go on. And this guy walked up to us and he said, "I think you need some help." And I said, "Yeah." I said, "I think they did some damage." And he looked the thing over and he said, "Yeah, you're going to have lots of repairs." But he went and got, he was a farmer, and he went and got one of those little tiny
Bobcats.
Bobcats. And put that mobile home right where it was supposed to be, and the truck that moved it couldn't even do that. And, of course, you know, he introduced us to a whole lot of people. So I needed to buy a washer and dryer and things like that. And he told us where we could, you know, with the heart, got us connected up with the hardware store. It worked out, but it was a very interesting experience.
I think I would see if Ira could help me work out a consistent way to get over to the clubhouse and try that. I wanted to correct one thing I said, though. That Traeger holds 18 pounds of pellets. That's where I got the 18 from. It burns 3 pounds an hour on high and 1 pound on low. So
there you go. See, that gets that information out there. But yeah, and it will let you know for our further adventures and mishaps, but I felt it was best to come on here and be honest and express some disappointment and think about the things that I could have done better to have prevented that particular problem. Not that we all do it perfect every time. We had trouble with the TV antenna going out and we corrected that problem. So you learn by your mistakes, and everybody makes them quite often, unfortunately. But the key is to learn by it. And so it's...
Somebody told me once, if you never make a mistake, you're probably not doing anything.
That's probably right.
I've heard that before.
Well, we're doing them.
It's 10 o'clock, guys, so just letting you know.
It's 10 o'clock. It's almost time for the Dave and Chris Hour. And Dave and Chris, did I put your demo in here? Let's see.
I think you did.
Yeah, you said you did earlier.
Let's see if I did. I did.
As a matter of fact, Chris, while you were looking there, Bill, Chris used Ira just a little bit ago, because I put the trash out about 4:15 this morning, and we had some pretty high winds.
It's been really
and
windy.
I was concerned that the wind might have blown it away, so she went down and used Ira and had them check out the yard, make sure everything was good.
Said it was all snowy, and there's snow all over our little trees. She said it's gorgeous.
Well, I'm thinking maybe if Ira could plot me out a route to there, is it safe to walk on a path where there is no sidewalks, I wonder?
Depends if cars are on that path.
Well, yeah, it would be safe if you could find a consistent way.
Depending on how busy that street is.
Yeah.
It's not.
Well, if there's no sidewalks, there's probably a berm, you know, like a little gravel along the edge of the road.
Right.
And if it is if it's a drivable path, and you want to be on the left side so that if vehicles coming toward you could see you. So that's it.
You may be able, I wonder, can you use, like if they could help you, can you use Nearby Explorer and drop breadcrumbs so you'd know, like, when you were getting to the clubhouse?
There you go.
I've got another have that comment.
Go ahead, sure.
Seriously, some of them do have a thing where you can, that they call breadcrumbs, where you can.
Bill, did you say there's a lighthouse in your area?
Yes.
Okay, if there is a lighthouse in your area, they might be able to provide you enough mobility. They should probably have some kind of a mobility instructor that's affiliated with them. And most of them, you know, if you're a resident there, whether it's a part-time resident or whatever, you know, as we are here, most of them will provide you whatever service you need free of charge, and they might be able to get an instructor out there just long enough to, you know, orient you and make you comfortable with that area, or at least let you know if it's something that's feasible for you to do or not, or safe.
Very true. Good suggestion, Shirley. That reminds me, I'm going to, I don't think it's in my Dropbox yet, but, you know, we've complained about companies this morning. Let's say something good about one. Back home in Indianapolis, I've got a friend who, she's been on the show, and she's been through some difficult times, but the gas company came out and put a new furnace in her house, and that was nice enough in itself, but she needed an accessible thermostat, and the people that work in the shop went together and spent their own money and bought a talking thermostat for her so that she can have for her furnace. So there are good people out there, and I'll get the name of this company and we'll publicize that, because that is a really, really good thing that the company would go out of their way to do that. So Dave and Chris, we're going to talk about a Christmas tree today?
Yep, we're going to demonstrate how to put up a Christmas tree.
Santa's Best. Now, Santa's Best is still sold on QVC. We've had this tree for, oh, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. They still have Easy Power on QVC, and that's the letter E and the letter Z. But Santa's Best also has some color wheel trees, and I don't know anything about those. So if you start to buy one like we're demoing, make sure it says Easy Power. And I saw everything from $300 to about $600, depending on the tree you buy and the height you buy. So that's just a cautionary note that Santa's Best does have other trees out there now. So if you want one like this, be sure it says Easy Power.
Okay, without further ado, I'm going to get this started. Is that okay?
Yep. Good morning, everyone. Well, Thanksgiving is over. The turkey is eaten and all the good stuff that goes with it. And Chris and I have probably gained about 15 million pounds. And now
you do all this work and they destroy it in 30 minutes.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? So today we are going to get out our Christmas tree and set it up. So what we're going to do is a demo of how to set up our Christmas tree. Now, this Christmas tree is kind of special because when you set this tree up, all of the lights are already on the sections of the tree. And our particular tree comes in three sections. Each one of those sections already has lights already on them, on each one of the sections. And the nice thing about this tree is that it has a feature called Easy Power.
And that's spelled E-Z.
Now, what Easy Power is on most trees, especially real Christmas trees, you have to put each one of your sets of lights on, and you got to plug them into each other. Each set has to plug into each other and all that kind of stuff. But with this tree, you don't have to do that. What they have done, a lot of the companies now have went to this Easy Power. And what that is all of your wiring for the electrical connections goes up through the post of each one of these sections. And on the very bottom of each section, there's a little post that sticks down. And inside the end of that post, there's like a little round plug. And it plugs into the, well, for example, if you have the bottom section into your Christmas tree stand, and then the next section, you take the middle section and you plug it into the bottom section. The bottom section has a round hole in the top of the post, and you put the middle section down into the bottom, into the hole in the of the bottom post, and that connects all of your power to the section, the second section of lights.
Nice thing, this is a Santa's Best brand, and the thing they have done, because it's a round plug, you don't have to turn it any certain way. Like some of them, you got to plug in like a, it'll have prongs and you got to plug them in certain little holes.
Right.
This one, you don't, you can just click it down and make sure it's in there all the way. And no matter which way you actually have it turned, it will work. And that's the thing we like about this one.
Now, the other nice thing about this tree is when you take the tree out of its box, when you get them and they're brand new, and there are many, many kinds of these and models of these trees.
We're going to talk about that in a minute.
When you take them out of the box, they've got, it comes in, depending on the size of the tree, it can be two sections, three sections, some even four, because some of them go up to as much as 9 feet tall. So you take them out of the box and they've got these tie wraps that goes around each one of the sections because it's all folded up because it comes in a box. So you take each one of the sections out of the box and you cut those tie wraps off, and you take a hold of the section and just stand it straight up, and all of the limbs fall down into place. They're hinged, which is
really nice because you have to, you only have to do very, very little shaping because everything just drops into place. So the first thing I'm going to do is let Chris give you some information about the Christmas trees and where we got them and that kind of good stuff.
Okay. As I said, this brand is called Santa's Best, and there are a number of brands out there now with power in the pole, but we happen to really like this one because they've made it so easy. And we got this tree from QVC, and we got it in July of 2014. We got it in a Christmas in July special. It happens to be a Colorado spruce, 6.5 foot. I'm not going to give you the item number because they don't have this exact tree. However, they have tons of trees. When I did a search for Easy Power, Santa's Best Easy Power on QVC, I came up with 31 results. And you can bet that the company has even more. But if you want to talk to somebody about it, the QVC number is 1-800-345-1212 for automated or 345-1515. For a real person, that's 1-800-345-1515. The phone number to Santa's Best is 1-888-831-6656. When I was looking on QVC, I saw these trees in every size from a 5 foot to a 9. I think I saw a 9.5. They have all kinds of functions. You can have white, you can have, or clear rather, you can have multicolor, you can have fade, you can have trees that switch between on their own, or you can set it to the function you want. You can have what they call chase, and they can chase, the lights can chase each other around the tree or up and down. You can do, you can have trees that have flip, where it flips from clear to multicolor to pastel and back. You can have trees that you can do all clear, you can do all multi, or you can do red and clear, or green and clear, or red, green, and clear. There's just so many kinds out there. It's amazing. When we started looking, boy, it gets almost confusing because there's so many. But if you want one, then I would suggest calling and just asking some questions, because if they don't have a tree for you, then I don't know. They range in price from $150 to $650, depending on the style and the size. And they have flocked trees and non-flocked trees. And just they just have so, so many kinds. And most all of them come with remotes.
Now, if you folks remember the old Christmas tree lights that used to be on, you used to put on the trees, and they got real hot,
the big ones, all that about kind of the stuff. Size of a nightlight bulb.
Yeah, they were pretty good size bulbs, and they did get very hot, and you had to worry about fires and all that kind of stuff. But with these are LED lights, and LEDs use very, very little electricity anyway, which is the nice thing about LED lights. They don't draw much power, and they work really well, and they last a long, long time. So, you know, it's a definite advantage to have a artificial tree like this with LED lights. Well, since we purchased our tree in 2014,
fourth Christmas.
Yeah, we don't have the box for it anymore, but we did. You can purchase a bag to store your tree in, and they make different sizes depending on the size of the tree. You know, your 6 foot, 9 foot.
We bought a 9 foot bag, but it has zippered ends so that it can be shortened if you want to. It's easiest for us to get it back in a 9 foot bag than a 6 foot, a 7 foot bag, because they're a little hard to get back in the bag. I mean, you can turn them upside down and the branches kind of fold back up, but not really.
Okay, so what I'm going to do now is we're going to go to the basement and take our tree out of its bag, the three sections of tree out of the bag, and then we will bring them upstairs and into our living room. Now, this also comes with a stand. It's a three-legged stand, and very little assembly to the stand, and I'll get to that in just a minute. So we'll be right back as soon as we go to the basement and take the sections out of the bag and bring them up into the living room along with the stand and the remote control. All right, now we are back up in our living room, and we have the three sections of the tree.
We have two on the couch and one in the recliner, and we have the cat in the bedroom, so he won't get in the way.
And so we are ready to do our things right now. So the first thing I'm going to do is talk about the stand that comes with it. It's a three-legged stand, and the I've got the stand. I actually have it in my hand. It's pretty light. It doesn't weigh much of anything. I believe it might be aluminum. I'm not sure, but it's probably pretty solid. It's got three legs, like a little tripod type affair. And then up at the top of the stand, there are some holes along the side of the top of the post of the stand. And what you do is you turn those holes around till it like slips down over the post, and you turn the holes around so that they line up with the holes in the bottom of the stand, so that you've got these four eye hooks. They're eye bolts. They have like a little round hole in the on the end that you turn. I take that back. There's three of those bolts because there's three legs. Anyway, so you what you do once you have those holes lined up, you turn these bolts that come with it, these little eye bolts, into those holes so that they go through the piece that slipped down over the post into the bottom post, and that locks that piece into place. But you don't turn them the whole way through. You turn them into where, if you take your finger on the inside of the post, you can feel where those bolts are coming through, but you don't want them to stick out, because what's going to happen is you're going to take the second section of the tree and you're going to slide that down in there. Once that's down in there, then you're going to tighten those three eye bolts. So what I'm going to do now is I have the stand, and as I said before, since we already purchased this in 2014, I already have the eye bolts into the stand. So it saved me a little bit of time, not very much, because it's not really much to it.
We just turn them in so they don't get lost. We turn them in a little bit.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to place my stand on the floor with the three legs sitting down on the floor, and my post is sticking up, and I'm going to locate the second the first section, which is the widest section. It's at its widest point. It's about 51 inches
in diameter. The smallest one I saw was 44, and they do have some bigger ones than ours.
So it's a pretty wide tree, but not too wide. It works really well for us in our living room because we're not gifted for space in our living room. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to locate the second, the first section, and I'm going to place it down. I'm going to locate the bottom of the section. Now, before I can put the first section in, at the bottom of the section, you can always tell the bottom section, because the bottom of the section, of the first section, it has sort of a point on the end of the post, because that's what sits down into your stand. And on the bottom section, or the first section of the Christmas tree, they have some wires with little wire ties on them to hold them up there, and that has the plug that goes into the wall and a foot pedal. So you want to take the wire ties off of that so you can spread those wires out so you can put your foot pedal, if you choose to use the foot pedal, on the floor, close to your tree so that you have access to it. And you want to make sure you have access to a receptacle so you can plug the plug into the receptacle. So I've taken the ties off of my wires, and extended them. And I'm ready to take this bottom section, the first section of the Christmas tree, and I'm going to take a hold of it, one hand at the bottom of the section of the post, so I can guide it with my right hand. And I'm going to take my other hand, my left hand, about halfway up the section. I'll reach in through all the branches and hold on to that. And I will guide this into the stand. I didn't turn those bolts in very tight so that they don't stick out, so it's not going to stop the post from the second section, from the first section, to go down into the stand. And it's going down into the stand.
You can hear it click down,
and it'll and it stops. And when it stops, then I will find those eye bolts that I was talking about in the top of the post of the stand, and I'm going to finger tighten those. I'm not going to force tighten them, but I'm just going to turn them so that the first section does not rock into the stand, because it's got to hold the other two sections.
Now I bring over the middle section.
Chris has got the middle section, and she...
I steady the top usually while he sticks the bottom down in the bottom of the middle section down in the top of the bottom section.
Okay. And there's a round hole in the top of the post of the first section, as I was talking about earlier when I explained about the easy power. So I want to take the second section and put it down into the hole of the bottom section.
On top of the bottom.
And I want to make sure that when I put it down in there, I push down on it good and tight so that the plug that's inside the post of the second section goes in tight into the first section or the bottom section.
Then you look and see if you have a little gap in your limb somewhere. And if you do, you can actually turn the middle section
now,
and kind of fill it in.
The first thing that happens once you put those two sections into the stand and the second section, all of those limbs will fall down into place, because those, they're on hinges, as I had said before. It's pretty amazing. So you have to do very little shaping of the tree.
You just have to look, see if you have any big holes, and if you do, kind of work with your limbs and fill them in.
So if I want to double check to make sure that those first two sections have power, I had extended my wires with my foot pedal and the plug that goes into the receptacle, and I will plug in the wire into the receptacle. And I must be getting old. Oh,
it's hard to get
Lord.
Before you back up.
So anyway, I've got the thing plugged into the wall, and if I need to, Chris, you want to grab a light probe? Okay, I have a light probe. And the first thing I'm going to do, I'm not going to step on the foot pedal. I'm just going to touch it with my hand, which I did. And I'm going to take my light probe and see if the lights are lit up on the Christmas tree on those first two sections.
Sometimes Tap Tap C will tell you this, and you can call Be My Eyes or Ira.
You can hear my light probe. And put my recorder down where I can get at them. And as you can hear, the lights are working on those first two sections.
And now the bird starts to do that stuff sometimes.
Yeah, the bird can be a real pain now. She starts to imitate the light probe. Now that I've got, and I'm going to go around and take my fingers and just check the shape of the tree, because you can, when that second section is plugged in, if you need to make sure that your limbs match up, you know, and you got it shaped the way you like it.
Because remember, it's round.
Yeah, the post is round, so you can actually turn it, and it does not interfere with your power. And make sure that it's shaped the way you want it.
And there is green tree-like stuff around the pole to kind of help hide it.
Yeah, it's kind of like a tinsel type stuff. Now we are ready for the top section, which is a lot smaller and a lot easier to handle.
Yeah. That's the section I always put in.
So we will find the top section. Chris is going to give me the top section. Give me that thing. All right. Now I got the top section, and I will find the top of the post of the second section by reaching, you know, my hand in there and finding the top of that post. And all I'm going to do is take the top section, find the bottom of that, the post of the top section, and slip it down into the hole of the second section and push it down to make sure that it is down solid so that it will connect to the power that controls the lights. So now I've got all of the sections plugged in to the tree, and I've positioned the tree just far enough away from the wall that I can reach in there so that when Chris and I decorate the tree, which, you know, we'll do at some point.
Probably today.
Probably sometime today. We'll put the decorations on the tree, and we've got bunches and bunches of them.
We don't use icicles because of the cat, but we have everything else.
Yeah, we have to watch the cat because the cat likes to mess with the balls on the tree and all that kind of good stuff.
Matter of fact, our grandson Gage found one this summer that was under something that we missed.
Yeah. So we've got it. Well, our tree is now together. Now, this tree came with a remote control. And the first thing that I want to tell you is when you plug this tree in and you use the foot pedal to turn the tree on, sometimes it may not turn on when you first put the plug in, so you have to press the foot pedal. And if you got really sensitive fingers, you can touch the LED lights and you can tell whether they're just warm, because that's about all they do is they get just a wee bit warm. And if you have a light probe, you can use a light probe to make sure the lights are on. The default is multicolor. And on the remote control, the remote control uses a 9-volt battery. It is a UHF, for those of you that know about frequencies, it is a UHF radio control, at least on this one it is. And it's got two buttons on the front of the unit. It has an antenna on the top that you can extend like a radio antenna, which we don't really have to use that because, you know, it's just in our living room and it's strong enough that it actually covers the whole house without having to extend the antenna. Now, they also make, before I forget about this, and Chris will explain it a little better than I can, they make what is called a smart plug that you can purchase from QVC. And
yeah, you can get it from QVC. You can get it from Amazon. It works with the A-Lady, or She Who Shall Not Be Named, as Jenny calls her. They have several kinds. The one we have is by a company called CASA, and it's a TP smart plug. And it lets you tell the A-Lady, you can name the smart plug, and it lets you tell her, turn off the Christmas tree or turn on the Christmas tree, which is really kind of nice.
And she'll say,
okay.
Okay. It's pretty cool.
If you listen real close and your hearing is good enough, you can actually hear it, the plug click slightly.
When it turns it on or off.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about the remote. Now, on the newer trees, they have a few more functions than what ours does. Ours is a 7-function remote.
I saw 8 functions. I saw 6 functions. I saw 137 functions on a couple of them. And I looked in the description to be sure it was real, and it was.
So, but this one, it's got 7 functions. The remote has 2 buttons, one on the left and one on the right on the front of the remote. The antenna is up at the very top on the top end of the remote so that you can get the location so you know where you are with your fingers. And the top right button is the power button, which you can remote control, turn the tree on and off. If you're not going to use a smart plug, or if you're going to use the foot pedal instead, the button on the left is the one that you tap. Every time you tap it, it changes functions. And the default is multicolor. And if you hit it again, it'll start fading the lights in and out, in and out, in and out. And as you go through the functions, it just does all kinds of things.
It twinkles, it switches from clear to multi, back to clear to multi, just kind of back and forth and back and forth. Or you can set it on solid multi. You can do all sorts of things.
Right. But the default is solid multicolor. In other words, it doesn't fade in and out or it doesn't twinkle. Some people like the lights to twinkle and some people don't. We kind of prefer them to be solid, but that's just our opinion.
The advantage to using the remote or a smart plug is your setting stays all year unless you change it with the remote. Now, if you use the foot pedal, didn't they tell us that if you use the foot pedal, it doesn't necessarily always stay the same?
Right.
That's the reason we tend not to use a foot pedal a whole lot unless the cat steps on it.
So we have the tree up and our lights are working. Our remote control is working. To be sure that we were on multicolor, we decided to use Iroglass and we called them and double checked to make sure that I was right, which fortunately I was. And they told us, yes, we had the setting on multicolored lights. So we were happy about that. In the meantime, the kitty got out of the bedroom, and I'll give you three guesses if you can figure out where he is. He is underneath the tree, sprawled out, relaxing.
I have a tree stand. We have a tree skirt, and he likes to lay on the tree skirt. He sleeps there a lot.
Yeah, he's pretty cool. It would make a good picture. We'll have to get one of those and maybe use it for a Christmas card.
One day I want to do that.
So anyway, our tree is assembled. Everything is working. And I will let Chris give you some information one more time.
Here again, this is a Santa's Best, and they have all kinds. They have Colorado spruces. They have balsam firs. They have flocked. They have unflocked. All sizes, you name it, they probably have it. You can buy them at QVC at 1-800-345-1515 for a real person. Or if you know what you want from QVC.com, you can then either order that way or you can call 1-800-345-1212 and place your order through the automated system. If you want more information from Santa's Best, their number is 1-888-831-6656. That's 1-888-831-6656.
Okay, well, that completes our demo of the Santa's Best Christmas tree. We're pretty proud of it. It looks good, and it feels a lot like a real Christmas tree. So, you know, you don't have to think that just because it's an artificial tree that...
Once upon a time, there was a tent.
You don't have to think that it, you know, it looks crappy or whatever the word might be for it, because these trees do look very real.
And we get to leave it up longer.
And sorry about the text interruption there. Anyway, that's all the time we have for this demo. If you have any questions, you can email Bill Sparks at bill@billsparks.org. That's bill@billsparks.org. And if he doesn't have the answer to the questions, he will get a hold of us, and we will be more than happy to help you out with any questions you might have. So that's it for now. Everyone have a great week. And if we don't talk to you before, have a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
There we go. Have a Christmas tree all set, right?
And I know they've demonstrated these trees on QVC quite a bit, so that with that, and they show you how simple it is to assemble. So when you use the remote, Dave, does it make any noise or beeping noises or anything so that you know what's going on with it?
No, it doesn't.
We set ours up with a smart plug for the A lady, and we just tell her to turn it off or turn it on.
Yeah, and since the default is colored lights, and you just tell her to turn on and off the tree, and
you would almost need to FaceTime somebody or call Ira and verify if you want your light setting to be a certain way.
Okay, well, that makes sense. I see Ellen and Joe have another question. Go ahead, guys.
This is Joe here. I'm just improvising a short little poem about Dave and Chris. Open the door, give you more. Yes, yes, yes. Dave and Chris sounds videos, everything, promotional things, things that whirl, pouring oil. They are blind people leading the way. Most sighted people think they can't do that, but they prove it on the Worldwide Legend Wednesday morning. So come and join the coffee club.
Thank you.
All right.
Now, I have to ask, does this thing generate any RF, like on your radio dial? I have to ask that.
No, actually, it does not. But it does not cause any interference.
We have the same tree, and it doesn't. And
oh, do
it's
you?
Quite good. Yeah, I would complain if it did. The old blinking lights used to be terrible.
Oh, yeah.
I really like this tree, and Santa's Best seems to have some good stuff out there.
Do the needles fall off this thing after a while?
No.
No.
Nope.
No, unless the cat decides to chew them off.
Could happen.
Well, let's hope it doesn't happen. I think Flash would have a new home if that happened.
Well, yeah. He chews on it a little bit, but he's getting better. He hasn't been too bad this year. He likes to lay under it, but that's okay.
How early do you set your tree up for the holiday? I know people who say that the day of Thanksgiving is when they put it up. Some people put it up later than that, earlier than that.
We had a rule at our house when I was growing up. The tree, once we switched to an artificial tree, the tree could not go up, according to Dad, until Thanksgiving dinner was over and the kitchen was completely cleaned up and the turkey was taken off the bone and all that stuff. We tend to set ours up the Friday or Saturday after.
That's what we do, too, except we didn't this year. We still haven't done it yet.
Uh-oh. I think
it'll probably be this weekend.
It was a little early. We set ours up, the Saturday after, wasn't it, or was it the Sunday after? It was
Saturday after.
Do you guys also decorate the outside of your house? Some people put Santa Clauses on the roof and things like that.
No, we did for a while. We had the Bliss lights and somebody stole them. And
we had a blow up snowman and we haven't put that up. We talked about it, but we just haven't gotten to all that yet. There is a wreath I put out, and sometimes we put out a second wreath, but that's about all.
I've always thought about writing them with a suggestion to the company that they make it so that you could run it without the foot pedal.
Actually, you can.
You can, this one.
Oh, okay, because I don't think we can. Maybe we can. We've had ours for about 4 years ago or five.
Ours, whenever you plug it in, the power is on.
I mean, the foot pedal is there, but you don't have to use it.
And then you can turn it on and off either with the remote or...
Yeah, because we never use the foot pedal, so...
Yeah, it would be nice if it was just eliminated. I mean, but it's there, but we just don't use it.
It's hardwired in, so you can't disconnect it.
Right.
That's what I meant, is running it without the foot pedal. I wish you could disconnect the foot pedal.
You know, Chris, I'm putting you on the spot, so you can kill me if you want to, but do you have any holiday recipes today at all, or do you have anything special today by chance?
I don't know. Are we done with...
I just have one question about the power of the light. Like, how many lights are there? How much power do you think you're using when running that?
Oh, you're under, 100 watt light bulb. So you're only using like maybe 25 watts if that.
And they're LEDs, aren't they?
Yeah, they're LEDs.
And there's a lot of them, but they're LEDs.
I can tell you, we used to do Christmas lights. I mean, well, we still do, but I mean, we put them up outside and we used to have hundreds, if not maybe over 1,000 lights. And when they were the old fashioned little light bulbs that got quite warm, we had trouble around here because we have very old wiring and it used to blow fuses. Well, now that we've gone to LEDs, we don't have any problem.
We used to wind them through the rail on the porch in the back and the front, but we quit doing that when we got the Bliss lights because it really wasn't necessary anymore.
I miss the brighter lights because I used to be able to see those as a kid.
I know.
Of course, I went now, but
that's what we remember.
I'll tell you what, though, some of these newer LEDs are pretty bright.
That's when we switched all of our outside lights to LEDs.
Yeah, now here in Minnesota, we have trouble with LEDs because they don't get warm. They don't melt snow off of them.
Oh, that would, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. They actually have that trouble with our stoplights and things like that, too. They actually put heaters in the lights so that when the temperature gets below a certain point, if there's snow, they come on and melt the snow off of them.
There you go.
Yeah, that's like we had to buy an electric blanket for our generator.
Poor thing.
By the way, that Generac generator must be very popular. I'm seeing infomercials for them at least once a week.
Yeah, and they work really well. And it's nice, clean voltage. You know, it's not 50 cycles or anything like that. It's regulated.
Now, I want to go back to manual strands of lighting because I'm going to be helping someone put together a tree, and I haven't done that in years and years and years. So now they, like, chain together, you're saying, right, as opposed to each strand having to be plugged in. They just kind of plug in together in series, or you just do one strand at a time, make sure they work.
Into the other, into the other, into the other, and it just makes one long.
Yeah, now they are parallel lights.
So they're parallel.
One goes out, the other ones will stay working.
Right, so each strand then.
Yeah.
But you can't move those bulbs like in the old school, right? You would, if you had a bad bulb, you could.
Yeah, you can.
So one bulb.
Yeah, they just unplug.
On that Santa's Best Christmas Tree, have you ever had a bulb go bad and have to order new bulbs from them for them, or are they pretty much stable?
Well, the only problem we had was the cat bit one of them and knocked it out. We did order some bulbs, and I just, you know, popped the old one out and replaced it.
But each strand is still in series, right? So if one goes out, you can either move one up from the end or just...
Well, actually, no, they're actually parallel.
Oh, so they've changed that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, they're parallel lights. So if you pull a bulb, doesn't knock out the other ones.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, she's probably got a bit of new and old. She's got 11 strands, and I bet some of them are old school. So.
Well, no, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you have to.
I'm not sure you can mix and match the new and the old that way.
These have a little power supply. Oh, go ahead, Dave.
I'll tell you what you can do, though, Mike, is if you have something that you can send, like if you've got series lights, and you can send a signal through the, obviously not plugged in, but through the electrical plug and follow it with your radio or whatever, you can find the one that's out.
Yeah, I think I'll do that. I'll just take a radio. Any certain frequencies good for, or just, of course, those?
It should travel pretty good. It works.
I never thought about using a radio to, I used to take a light probe and do that, but I never thought about taking a radio.
Yeah, because it'll find where the current drops off.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah, because you'll hear the static on the radio, right? Is that what you're saying?
Use the radio for all AM radio, especially.
Hey, Chris, how about those recipes?
I do have a recipe, and I'm going to go ahead and do it. It's more of a fallish kind of recipe, but I've had it down here for a while. It's called pumpkin cookies, and they are really, really good. This is I've doubled the recipe because if I'm going to go to the trouble of making cookies, I'm going to make a lot. 1 cup of butter softened or margarine, 1 cup of vegetable shortening, 2 cups of granulated sugar, 4 eggs, 2 cups of cooked or canned pumpkin, 4 teaspoons of vanilla, 4 cups of unsifted flour, 2 teaspoons baking powder, 1 teaspoon of salt, 8 teaspoons of pumpkin pie spice, and of course this next part is kind of optional, although I like it, 2 cups of raisins and 2 cups of chopped nuts. And what you do is you lightly grease the baking sheets, or you can use parchment paper, and preheat your oven to 350. In a mixing bowl, you cream together your butter, shortening, and sugar. Beat in the pumpkin and vanilla, and then you add everything else and stir till just combined. Drop by rounded teaspoons onto your baking sheets, and you bake it at 350 for 12 to 15 minutes or until the center is set. Now, this makes about 120 cookies, and you can half that recipe.
I'm coming over once you make them, Chris.
They're good. We usually make them. We didn't make them this year yet, but we usually make them every fall. They're really good.
I am getting, every time I talk to you, Chris, I get hungry.
Now, some people put icing on the pumpkin cookies or just.
Well, you could, I suppose, but these are drop cookies. So when they come out of the oven, because of the nuts and raisins, they're kind of bumpy on top.
That'd be an art form to put that on there. Yeah.
Yeah, you.
And they're probably sweet enough, I guess.
Yeah, they are sweet enough, but you could drizzle them with a little bit of glaze or powdered sugar frosting or something, but they really don't need it.
For those who are listening, you're listening to the Coffee Club on the Worldwide Legend at www.legendoldies.com. Chris, my daughter was watching QVC with me, and she says, Daddy, Daddy. Yes, Brenna. They have a bread man bread machine. Can a blind person use those bread makers?
It depends on the kind, really. I mean, yes, you could figure out how to use it. It would be easier not to have a touch screen and menus, but I don't know. I haven't really looked around at bread machines. I know they used to have some that were pretty straightforward, but like anything else, I don't know now. I really never really wanted a bread machine. I love homemade bread, but they take up so much room. They're huge.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I told her. And I said to her, you know, in reality, even though I like to make homemade bread, it seems cheaper just to buy it in the supermarket, really. I mean, I know you're not getting the same thing as a homemade bread, but you know what I'm saying, Chris?
Well, a lot of the frozen bacon serve loaves are pretty good, you know?
Yeah. We had the Pillsbury version of the bread machine, and it was called the talking bread machine, but their talking was pretty worthless. It would say things like done baking and things like that, and that was about all. I mean, it didn't give you any features as far as what buttons you were pushing or anything like that.
You know, I don't know anything about the bread man, but my daughter happened to be over and we were watching television and I turned on QVC and she keyed on looking at the bread machine and I was going to change the channel. No, let's watch that, Daddy. I did not give in to temptation and buy the machine, but she wanted to watch the demonstration anyway.
Bill and I were talking yesterday about, you know, and you know, he asked me and I agreed with him. Did you ever go to the store and you buy something and you're really excited about it and you get it home and it's not accessible?
Or it says it talks, but it just says cute little stuff like, have a nice day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, that happens a lot. You know, you have to be really careful these days when you're
They hype stuff up so much and make you think it's really going to do all these things. Oh, it's Google and whatchamacallit enabled, and it's going to do all these things. And yeah.
Speaking of Google, I want to mention that last week, I don't know what they've done, but they've dumbed it down. Some update over Thanksgiving weekend, and I came back, first of all, to listen to radio. Now, you have to say radio station. So if you want to listen to Legend Oldies, you have to say, hey, Google, listen to radio station Legend Oldies. And you, So, you know, that's the bad thing, because maybe in a few days it'll go back to the way it was before. Maybe they did that to open up more options, you know, for branding purposes. Or people can pay to have, I think eventually that's what's going to happen. Amazon and Google, eventually you'll have to pay to have those keywords launch your content. I see that coming. And this is just an example of, makes me think that's the direction it's going to go. But I think it's going to make it hard because people get used to saying things a certain way and they're not going to just keep guessing when they break something like that and try five or six or seven different ways to ask for it. But
that's true. Maybe the idea is if you want a talking microwave oven. Remember, you were talking about microwave ovens. I mean, it's an expensive, but the company, and I do believe they sell them over here, is a company called Cobalt, and I know they make a talking microwave oven. And I've never played with it, but I know everything works on it. Everything, every button you push on it works. But again, that's not the same technology as what Bill was looking at with the Whirlpool microwave oven. I don't know about the
Cobalt. Yeah, I think. When I did some research on that, I had heard that, and the problem, well, what they told me is that, you know, overseas they use 220, and they didn't have the conversion for 110.
Here. So you would actually have to buy something that converts, that steps down the 220 to 110.
Well, and, yeah.
And that, 60 cycles, of course.
Yeah, and to get something that's heavy enough to do that might be a problem.
Maybe today, we'll have to do some research. Maybe today the talking microwave ovens from Cobalt might work here. Maybe they've made a version for here. That I don't know, Dave. But I did hear a demonstration on some British podcast years ago of how it worked. And everything talked on it, and it did work. They do make those talking scales, Cobalt, that measure in pounds or kilograms. So yeah. Those work pretty well. I don't know if they do it in stone or not, because I know they used to do weights in stone in England, but I don't see too many people use that term anymore.
Well, maybe Bill could get Randy to come back on. I thought the GE one that he has actually talked. So there was some initial setup, I think, getting it online and so forth. But maybe Randy or someone that actually has one of those can come on and talk about what it does and its limitations and so forth. But
there you go.
Mike, you have the Fire tablet, and someone wrote me a letter on all through my All Things Radio email address and wanted to know how to make it talk. They didn't have any sighted assistance out of the box. Can you just say quickly how
I'm to trying do to remember. Is it you hold two fingers like an inch apart or something like that, but then some said it didn't work for all devices. I think Dave and Chris had a problem with that. It worked for me, but you had to get it set up and get it online so that it could update the firmware of the device. But mine did that. I'm trying to remember. It's like two fingers held about an inch apart, I believe, was the way to get it talking out of the box.
And did you have to hold another switch down while you were doing that as well?
You know, I don't recall. I just kind of remember that holding two fingers about an inch apart.
But in the center of the screen, was it?
I don't know if it matters. I can't remember. You know, and sometimes you do those things and you just kind of, it's kind of like driving somewhere. It's hard to articulate, remember how you did it. You just kind of got there. But that was my recollection, is holding two fingers on there about an inch apart. But you have to do it, I think, when you first turn it on. You can't do it later. It has to be there, I think, when you first turn the device on to get the speech going.
So okay.
That's my recollection. But I think Dave and Chris, and I think some have said it didn't work for all devices. Some devices had to manually be updated first with the firmware, and I think they had to use Ira. I don't want to speak on their behalf, but that was my recollection, that some folks it did work and some it didn't.
Yeah,
we had to... It needed updates in what do they call that? Voice view.
Voice view
didn't come on, and you had to get the password put in before you could connect to the internet to get your updates. So it was a real pain. We got it, but it took a while and a lot of work and patience.
Again, buyer beware. When you buy this stuff, you may have to use Ira or get Sight of the Systems to help you out at some point if it doesn't work with Mike's method.
Yeah, I got the 10-inch tablet and it worked. They had them on sale for $99, so I got that. Just assuming, I guess it was 1080p, and I didn't know who else would be watching it, but I need to try this microphone with that and see if it'll work. If the Android will pick that up and use this iRig Pro, which could make it a nice audio device. I'm not real crazy about the built-in audio. It's got this weird compression to it.
Do these Fire tablets have a USB port on them as well? So let's say I had my Audio Technica mic, if I put that in there, would it work with it?
I don't know if that would. I think that was. Well, it's not USB. It's a, what do they call that, a micro?
Oh, okay. No, that wouldn't work then, at that point.
Where is Bill hiding?
Hello, Mr. Bill. We lost him. Maybe something came up there on that end he had to tend to.
Yeah. Jennifer, are you there?
He might have gotten a phone call.
No. I'm here. I don't wonder why you're not hearing my audio.
You're a little low. That's,
yeah, we got you now. Go ahead, Bill.
Wow, I'm as loud as I can get this thing.
Maybe it's the thing in Zoom, that built-in compression or something, and maybe you want to, after the show, go in there and turn that off so it won't quit messing with your levels or something.
Yeah, I had mine turned off as well. Tim, what's your year for tomorrow? 1974, is that correct? Yes, you're muted. Try it now, Bill. Talk again. You just did something.
Talking. No.
There you go. Whoa, whoa.
Hot, but yeah, there you go.
Are we about right there now?
Yep. Yeah, yeah, if you can mark that position on the pot or just keep it there, I think it'll be perfect.
Okay.
Yep. Sounds good. And 1974 is correct.
1974?
And Jeff, did you have a request for me? I can't remember.
No. I was going to say Sky Pilot, but I think that's a little bit too raucous, too crazy for the midday. How about Stay a While by the Bells, a group from Canada?
Oh, we can do that. Be the first song.
And we'll have to talk tomorrow night on All Things Radio Extra. Is this... Jerome Corsi, the guy that they have on Coast to Coast AM, is he about to maybe have some issues? So maybe we'll talk about that tomorrow on ATR Extra.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not even sure who he is. I've heard the name mentioned before.
Well, he's like a political correspondent for Coast to Coast AM. And I think he's about to come under the fire of the Mueller investigation. But anyway, we'll research that and see what's going on and talk about that tomorrow. Maybe something will be done with that. But
should be interesting.
Good radio voice. Got a good voice.
Well, it's 10:58. Bill, it's great coffee club today.
Just about time to wrap it up. We've got several good recordings. Chris will post the recipe. The podcast will be posted. So you can get your recipe if you want to cook those pumpkin cookies. If you want to listen to this later, you may certainly do that. And we'll have more updates for you. Of course, next week we'll be on tomorrow night for ATR Live and ATR Extra. So you will be able to hear us, and maybe we'll have some more updates for you. I know there's always changing radio news. Anyone else got anything before we shut this thing down?
No, we covered it all.
Covered it all. We did. We'll be playing more Christmas requests on the Legend. I had a caller say, tired of that Christmas music already, but I
can't. Standby. Connected description. Streamers connected.
Oops. Sorry. Oh, what was that? That was my thing telling me when you're going to put me on, but I didn't mean to have it so loud.
Well, my one Christmas favorite I never tire of, that Tim could play if he likes it, This Christmas by Donny Hathaway. Just love that song. I don't know. I just
Ah, we can do that.
I like the one about the Christmas, about the guy, the little kid buying shoes, and I forget the name of the song, but can I buy
Christmas
these?
Christmas shoes.
Yeah, Christmas shoes. I don't know why I like, I'm this Jewish guy from the Bronx, but I happen to like that Christmas song, along with many others.
It's Alabama new song.
Yeah, we've got Christmas. That. We play that one a lot. We play that one a lot. I had some.
I still like the song that spells out Christmas. I think that's one of my favorite Christmas songs.
Oh, by Jim Reeves. Yeah.
Oh, Father Christmas by Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. That's a great one.
Yeah.
I agree with that one, Mike.
I think now that I've got this thing fixed, it's time to quit. And you guys have a good one. Thank you for listening. As always, go check out the Legend Oldies website. Join the mailing list if you're interested in what we're doing. And perhaps you can give us some input and make this show so much better.